Today, Doug and Dave explore how to manage younger and older employees. We find the parallels of leadership and football, and the importance of toilet paper in the themed attraction business. All that today on Job Talk!
Welcome to Job Talk, where our job is to make your job more fun and profitable. My name's Doug Meinert.
I'm Dave Force.
And every week we talk with people around the country who are doing just what we all do, working for a living.
We're speaking to Jess Ollie, the assistant general manager at Mortgage Wonderland in San Antonio, Texas. It's the world's first theme park that's designed for the special needs community where all can play. It's meant to be a facility where those with or without special needs can interact with each other. It's a park of inclusion. It's a very special location. And Jess has been employed there pretty much since day one. But knowing Jess and her personality, I'm quite sure she's successful with it.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
We are great. Hey, we are really interested in learning two things. One, a little bit more about Morgan's Wonderland, but we really want to talk to you about managing young people and working with young people and working with young constituents in the park.
Great.
I was expressing to Doug the fact that you had to manage younger people and manage their situations and their problems. And, you know, when some 18-year-old, 17-year-old kid says, oh, I can't work today because my boyfriend's going to take me out for dinner tonight. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, we've got a business to operate, and I don't see that as being an insurmountable problem. But to that young individual, that's very, very important. And so you had to manage with that on a daily basis and still meet the criteria of our business, and you did it very, very effectively. So my question is, how do you manage people that have different challenges than older generation people challenges and face what they face?
In order to gain respect out of someone, I feel that you need to be their friend, to just ask them how their day is or how their family is doing. You know, if you engage in them, I always have a fine line. There's a manager side and then I have a personal side. I don't mix the two, and I make sure not to mix the two. But when it comes to managing the younger people, at first, it was really hard. Me jumping into a manager position right away, and I didn't have any managerial experience, and I was just coming from the bottom up, it was a struggle to get someone to gain their respect and for them to understand who I was and that I wasn't here to hurt them. I was here to make the company better and make the business better. But just by asking them everyday questions like, oh, so how's your family? You know, if you engage in them, if you, I don't want to say act like you're interested, but if you show them that you're interested in their personal life, they'll give you the respect that you're looking for in their work life.
So we hear that a lot. You know, what I found is that most people understood. When I started in the park business, you know, I was 20. When I started hiring people, I was 23. So everybody was kind of my age. And I found that if I did exactly what you're saying, they understood that you had to change how you related because that suddenly my position was a little bit different. But it doesn't mean you leave them behind. It just means that you relate to them in a slightly different way.
Yes, absolutely. And for me, like, it was hard for me to determine that fine line. I knew I had to put that line in place of, okay, you know, whenever we worked as peers, whenever you and I were at the same level, we would hang out and we would have a good time. But now I'm your boss or I'm your manager, and I need to cut that because I need you to look at me as a boss versus a friend, you know. But I want you to look at me as a friend and someone that you can come to for advice and all that good stuff. But I need you to look at me as someone who you can take direction from as well.
Here's a question for you. You're young. Tell us a horror story about working for older people. Tell us a story about working for an older...
You mean like me? Is that what you're saying? Tell us a bad thing about what Dave tried to make you do, whatever case.
Dave's got stepped out for a drink of water, so don't worry about him.
I'll leave the studio right now. You could
tell us a story about a time when... Because have there been interesting... I don't have to name names or anything, but I'm just curious if you run into people who come from 20 years older than you who you might have had difficulty relating to, or they thought they were doing the right thing, but the way they said things just didn't work for you, or you're just curious because we hear those stories too.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm one of the youngest people at the park, so everyone else is older than me. So working with them, it's not a big issue, but it's harder for me to gain respect from someone who's older if I'm managing them because they look at me and they just think, oh, she's young, she doesn't know what she's talking about. But in reality, I've been here a lot longer than everyone here. So they also come to me for advice and they look to me for, okay, so what did you do in the past and what did you do this way and will this work and blah, 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 blah. But Fortunately, they're more mature than the staff that I manage, which is younger. Mm-hmm. So it's not too much of a struggle when it comes to having to direct them or tell them, you know, something like, we don't do that here, we do this. So I find it easier because I feel like I can also relate more so to the older crowd than the younger crowd. I'm also kind of at that age where I'm stuck in the middle, so it's easy for me to relate to both.
Hey, you know, so. I had the problem of looking extremely young when I was like 20. I mean, I looked, you know, 12. This might work for you. What worked for me is I grew whiskers. It kind of pushed me over the top.
All three of them?
Oh my gosh.
Jess, no, you, if I may be so bold, would you share with us how old you are, if you don't mind asking?
Oh gosh, I'm 27.
Okay, that's fine. We're just trying to get an idea so that our listeners understand. So here's a young lady, 27 years old, mm-hmm. who is the second ranking management person in the park. And most of the people that report to you are older, mm-hmm. but as far as the frontline employees, they're younger. So as you articulated, you're kind of in the middle there. That makes it very, very interesting.
Yeah, it is. I've never really had a struggle. Our turnover rate is, well, we're seasonal. So as you can imagine, it turns over quickly with mm-hmm. seasonal employees. And even then, so with full-time employees too. So fortunately, a lot of the full-time employees have stuck around a little bit longer, but I'm able to relate to them. Everyone has a really good positive attitude. So you're not working with any Debbie Downers, you know, over here. So yeah. It's really easy to relate to people and just find that happy medium from both. But I know that when my boss tells me to do something, I'm going to do it just as I would expect that from anyone else. If I were to tell them to do something, that they would do it. And sure. So it's easier, especially if you're liked. I've worked in businesses where I'm not liked. I don't know why. I hate the excuse like, oh, people are just jealous, but yeah. I really don't think that was ever the excuse.
You know,
they just didn't like me.
Dave and I talk about this all the time, is that you can't ever picture that, you know, you might be annoying to somebody, but Dave and I know we were both annoying to various people and sometimes to each other. You're never going to please everybody. And frankly, if you're pleasing everybody, you're probably not making the tough decisions and doing your job. So that's natural.
Yeah.
Youth does not mean that you're not as responsible and as tough and as focused. And in many ways, I think it's the huge advantage. So congratulations on your success and everything you're doing to grow what is really a marvelous institution in San Antonio.
Oh, thank you.
You know, from time to time, we'd like to call you back and check in and see how things are going. Because, you know, in another 6 months, you'll be 27 and a half. And
oh, gosh.
so much older.
I know. Oh, gosh. I'm not looking forward to the 30 age. I've heard that's a nightmare. So.
You know. I would love to be looking forward to my 30th birthday.
Well, here's one thing we laugh about, those of us who've been in the park business for a long time, is that theme park years are like dog years. Every year is worth mm-hmm. like 7 years on the outside. So keep that in mind. You're really a lot older than you think you are.
Jess, thank you so very, very much for taking time out of your day. And as Doug said, we'd like to touch base with you again sometime in the future and tell us about what's taking place at Mortgage Wonderland and the terrific activities that you have going on there.
All right. No problem. Y'all have a good day.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. So this time of year, football, American football, is rapidly coming to a close. And, you know, the popularity of the sport over the last 60 years, what it's done and how it's become a brand, and when it's played really, really well, tough but fair, and, you know, how inspiring it can be. And, you know, people use sports metaphors a lot in business. And I think that's fair as long as you broaden it for all your constituents with other examples. And when you think about sports and leadership in the workplace, you know, there are some common factors. You want, for example, you want everybody to be really, really passionate, and you want people to work really, really hard, and you want people to be about the team and not about themselves. And I think in the workplace, as in sports, particularly football, perhaps this past season, there have been some examples of leadership that hasn't effectively controlled the passions of some of the participants. I'm just curious your take on leadership. What's right? What's wrong? What happens when things fall apart, either on the field or in the workplace?
What makes a successful football coach? I'll go back to Don Shula with the Dolphins. You know, they were the last team with undefeated season. But every year he had different players on the field, but they always had, you know, a great record. Greg Popovich basketball with the Spurs, great record, no matter who the people are on the field. So that tells me that the coach, again, goes back to effective communication, effective leadership, knowing how to work with the team you have. You mentioned the fact that football has progressed. I mean, you look at the size of the guys playing football anymore. They're so much bigger. They're so much faster. So things have evolved as far as the athletes themselves. The game hasn't changed.
Right.
They haven't changed the rules. They haven't changed the strategies. They've changed some of the tactics to make things happen. But the one variable that I see as being the wild card is the different personalities of the players and the need for them, as you mentioned, to get so passionate about it and they get so intense. Now, how do you channel that intensity to be productive versus destructive? And thus, penalty flags. You know, you make an error on a football field and there's a penalty. The one that's the costliest are the ones that we refer to as the personal fouls, where people go beyond just the fact that it wasn't tactically an error, but emotionally it was an error. When people intentionally try to hurt someone, it's referred to as a personal foul. In fact, there was a very famous, very recent game where a team who made it to the playoffs, and because the players on that team, in essence, lost control of their personalities, their intensity got out of hand, that they literally lost the game due to penalties.
Right.
So the question becomes, whose fault is that? Now, obviously, the person that caused the infraction was the source of the infraction, the source of the penalty. The result was the ball got moved, made it easier for the other team to score. They scored, the game was over, and the penalized team lost. So he lets down the individual that lets down his teammates that spent all that time getting to this point. This is in the playoffs, so they played the entire season to get to this point. They played this entire game to get to this point. And you know, the loser goes home at this point in time. So you let down all the players on your team. You let down all the fans that were there that have been supporting you. You let down the owner of the team. You let down the coach. But at the same time, my question is, did the coach not do an effective job of teaching leadership? If they respected the coach, they would have listened to his cautionary comments previously, like, do not cause any kind of penalty at this point in time. It's the end of the game. So I kind of put the onus on the coach. That tells me the leadership is not as effective.
Right. So in spite of, you know, the barriers that are put into place to try and control behavior, barriers is perhaps the wrong term, but
parameters. You put parameters in place.
Right. Parameters and you know, the usual positive reinforcement, all the things that we talk about. There are times when there are individuals who are not responding. The question is it the individual who needs to be removed or replaced, or the group, or is it the leader?
Yeah.
Who needs to be replaced. But you bring up an interesting piece of psychology that I'd like to kind of quiz you on. There's basketball and there's football. In one sport, a personal foul is used as a tactic. It's used as a piece of strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And in the other sport, it's not allowed.
Yeah.
What's the difference between, it's the same term. The same term means very different things in those two different sports.
Well, okay. Here's the difference as I see it. And I'm not a referee, and people out there that are officials are going to cringe if I say something the wrong way. I apologize in advance. But in football, the intent is for me to hit you as I tackle you, to hit you as hard as I can without aiming for your head. But then if you kind of duck your head down at the last second and I inadvertently hit it, well, then whose fault is that? And right now, the way they've been over the past number of years, they've been looking, who's at fault for that?
Right.
And it's what's caused injuries. In basketball, the purpose of me to avoid making contact with you, and if I inadvertently hit you and prevent you from shooting the ball because I hit your arm as you're shooting the ball, that's a personal foul,
right?
And you get to shoot it. So I am not trying to make contact with your arm. Or in football, I am trying to make contact with you.
Right.
And so basketball is termed a non-contact sport, mm-hmm. but I defy anybody to watch basketball. I mean, if you're there in the arena watching it, oh my word.
Right.
The pushing, the shoving, it's a matter of the tolerance level. At what point in time is it allowed?
Right. Well, now there's another wrinkle to this.
Okay.
And that is that in basketball, intentionally fouling is used as a device. And so the question for the leader, you see where I'm headed with this, because we put parameters out there for employees and for ourselves. In one set of circumstances, in one sport, we're intentionally going beyond those parameters, and in the other sport, we're not. So translate that to the workplace for a minute in terms of, and this is why leaders have their hands full trying to get results from diverse types of groups and diverse types of circumstances.
Okay, let me before I move to the business side, let me go back to the basketball side, because this will bring up what you're talking about. Intentional fouling is a strategy. It's a tactic. It turns the game ugly. It turns the game boring. But right now, it's a rule that is allowed. There are numerous coaches that will admittedly say, this is not helping the game. But if I'm allowed to do that in order to win, and I'm getting paid to win basketball games, I will use that. If you don't like it, change the rules. You know, God love them. Lawyers, they use the law to get criminals, you know, off. You know, some piece of evidence comes up and the judge says, oh, well, that's inadmissible. We can't use that because someone said this instead of that. And bingo, all of a sudden, the guy that literally broke in your house is allowed to walk away because of some technicality, I think. That becomes very frustrating. So your question is, at the workplace, what is allowed, what's not allowed? Look at Enron. The people at Enron used the existing rules to push the limits so they'd get personal gain with their bonuses. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the industry started to collapse because the people in marketing and sales would get bonuses based upon how many clients they had. Okay? Those are the entrepreneurs, and they were getting bonuses. Mm-hmm. The controlling side were your auditors, your safety, security, that had strict, narrow parameters of what they would allow. And they're saying, well, wait a second, how come they're getting bonuses for kind of pushing the envelope and we're staying within the envelope and we don't get anything? So what if we kind of allow our parameters to expand a little bit? And with that, erosion began. Next thing you know, Enron fell apart and other businesses did the same type of thing. They let their controls loosen up because the entrepreneurial side was getting away with it.
Right. And you know why I think it's, your point is well taken in basketball, by the way. But why it's important is that because one of the justifications for sports in higher academics and in colleges and universities, other than the obvious that it makes money and gives visibility to the school, but particularly perhaps in secondary school, is that we're using this to teach ethics and morals to kids. And so you have the sort of counterintuitive thing where, yeah, it's not really the coolest thing in the world to foul or intentionally foul, but we wink at it because it's a defined tactic that we've decided to accept. Because as we work with young people, whether it's in, you know, volunteer or whether it's in the classroom or whether it's their first jobs, and as we work with employees, that whole point of defining the parameters that we know are right and we know are wrong, and yet understanding what flexibility is within them is really a challenge for modern managers.
And that's why I admire golf. It's the only sport where people will call penalties on themselves.
Now I believe you're an introvert. So on the line, we have Jeffrey Baldwin, who is the Director of Operations at Hemisphere Park in beautiful San Antonio, Texas. How you doing, Jeff?
I am doing great. How are you guys?
We're good. Jeff has close to 40 years of experience, frontline operations in the themed attraction business. And I can tell you, having worked in many parks, that when the weather turns and the park starts to flood and there's a million people who all want something at the same time and the power goes off and a show has to be rescheduled and a ride gets stuck, or heaven forbid, there's no toilet paper in the men's room, you want Jeff on your team. Because he's
especially the toilet paper one.
But he has seen it all, done it all, solved it all.
It's right. Jeff has been with Hemisphere. Now, Hemisphere is a new facility there in San Antonio, right, Jeff?
Yes. We're the site of the 1968 World's Fair. And the company that I am working with now is the Hemisphere Redevelopment Corporation. And our job is to, exactly what the title says, redevelop the footprint of the 1968 World's Fair and reactivate it. We opened our first phase in October of last year called Yanaguana Gardens.
That is such an exciting project. You know, so often the infrastructure of World's Fairs lies fallow, like the 64 World's Fair, there's almost nothing left. As you know, they're built for temporary purpose, and as soon as the fair is over, they go away. So applause once again to San Antonio, Texas for being innovative in urban redevelopment, home of the Riverwalk.
Now, the reason that I wanted to have Jeff give us a call here is Jeff has a unique situation, but unfortunately not unique to a lot of people in the world. As Doug mentioned, Jeff has nearly 40 years experience in theme park experience, if you will. And he's been with a company for a very long period of time. And like a lot of major companies, on occasion, there's a business model that changes. And as a result, they do downsizing, they do a RIF, they do layoffs, whatever you might want to call it. And oftentimes, people who are doing a phenomenal job just happen to be in a slot that is eliminated. So they're not eliminating a face, but rather they're eliminating a position. And Jeff was unfortunate to be in that type of circumstance. And it's the trials and tribulations of you're losing a good performer, but from a business model standpoint, they decided they're going to go in a different direction. So Jeff is one of those individuals that went through that process and fortunately landed on his feet. And I was hoping Jeff would be willing to share that transition with those out there that might be going through the exact same thing, to give them a heads up on what you have control over, what you don't have control over. And Jeff, now that you've been through it, what kind of advice would you give to someone that's in that phase now?
Well, you know, I think the first thing is you have to allow yourself to adjust. The reality of it is when you lose a job suddenly, like I lost mine, and like you've mentioned, many, many other people have, the thing that I found hardest to do was get over the idea that I didn't have that job anymore. When you work for a company for a long, long time, and I was 36 years in my position, you don't want to be defined by your job, but you really do become defined by your job. People remember, oh, I know where to find this guy because he works there. He's worked there forever. That's how I can get hold of him. And when that happened to me, it was very difficult for me to recognize the fact that that wasn't who I was anymore. And whenever I would try to think about the next step of my career, I couldn't get past the point that I wasn't doing what I had been doing. I had to give myself time to adjust to that.
Yeah. And as you said, you went beyond. You didn't take it personal because you yourself experienced being on the other side of the desk when that occurred, correct?
That's correct. I had over the years had to be the person delivering the news that you don't have a job anymore. And as you mentioned earlier, it doesn't have anything to do with performance most of the time. It's usually financial. And these people add up to this amount of money, and that's the amount of money I need to get rid of. Or corporately, they said, get rid of these three positions, and they don't really care who was in the position or what they did or how well you knew them. You're gone. I guess luckily for me, I could intellectually understand that. So I didn't take it personal. I didn't hate the company. I still am huge fans of it. My daughter works there. But doesn't make it any easier the first few weeks. I would almost call it anxiety attacks. I would be driving and something would trigger a memory, and all of a sudden it would hit me again that I just got laid off from a job of 36 years. What am I going to do now?
So Jeff, let me ask this, and I don't mean to be personal about it, but the fact that you gained employment again, how much of it was financial driven versus how much of it was driven by the fact that I'm not going to sit at home because that's not what I'm about?
It probably at the point when I got my new job, because I was laid off in December and I was started my new career here at Hemisphere in April. So I was only out of work about 4 months, and I could have gone probably another 6 to 8 without having to really worry. But I reached a point at about the 3 months where I wanted to work again. I didn't want to sit at home anymore. I wanted to be busy doing something that excited me again. And that made it much easier than to start looking at what might be out there and putting myself in that position and saying, hey, I could do that. That would be fun. I could take this experience and use it in that environment.
You know, one of the things that we hear a lot, and I know I experienced it myself in transition, is that you go through that series of phases where you deal with it different ways. And you're right, anxiety attack is is a pretty apt description. And, you know, so eventually you come to a realization that there's life beyond the 36 years you knew. You discover things about yourself and also about the world at large that you never could have if you'd never left. You bring this marvelous experience from a first-class operation to this really, really exciting urban redevelopment organization that needs people with your experience. Can you talk a little bit about how gratifying it must be to bring your experience and have it appreciated that way, and how you've been able to apply it in your new role?
I feel so lucky, so blessed to have gotten this new job. And a lot of what you're talking about, Doug, is exactly what hit me. I had people telling me that I was going to be surprised. I was going to find that the experiences that I had in 36 years with my past company was going to make it easy to get a job. And in the beginning, I didn't believe that or listen to that. And that when I got that new job, I was going to be surprised at how other people saw my skills and ability and experience. When I got this job at Hemisphere, I found out right away people were amazed at my background and the type of feedback and interaction and positive support with every little thing I did was just remarkable. I mean, talk about being so excited and being in a situation where everybody you talk to, they say, I've heard about you, your background. I can't believe we were lucky enough to get you in this job. I'm so excited that, you know, what you bring to the park and looking forward to your experiences and just being so welcomed and so appreciated with every little thing that, you know, was stuff that I did all the time in my normal job. And I didn't think it was a big deal. And in this new environment, it was considered a huge deal.
Yeah, of course.
And it was just amazing.
There's an old saying, a prophet is without honor in his own land. And sometimes when somebody moves to a new position, a new place, in a whole new context, you get the opportunity to really shine in a whole different way because of all the new people you're dealing with, because the fact that they're searching for the kind of expertise that you bring, specifically the kind of expertise you bring in an exciting new venture.
Well, and the way I see it is Jeff brings a level of confidence to those around him because they know that he's a resource. He's a valued resource. Yes. He brings his expertise. But now let's go the other way. Jeff, you're in a new position, and it's not your routine of all the operational aspects of things, which you knew all the different multitudes, as Doug so eloquently pointed out to begin with, no matter what the problem would be. So now, on a daily basis, what kind of new things are you facing that you hadn't before? And they're kind of exciting because you haven't had to face this challenge, but you're not afraid of it because you know how to deal with the challenge.
Yes. One of the first things is, you know, I came from an environment where I was a department head for a department of 700 plus employees. I had access to crews of people standing by literally at my beck and call. If I needed something to happen, I could send an email, make a phone call, and within minutes, or if it was an evening thing, within hours, I could have a crew of 10, 15, 20 people take care of it.
Now, wait, is that the same park I used to work for? Just
well,
kidding.
That's the difference between operations and entertainment.
I know.
That could be another phone call. But now, when I first started with Hemisphere, I was the 10th employee that they hired. I was the only operations person. Everybody else that was on board was in project management or business development. These were the people that did all the planning, figured out how to build this wonderful park, and now they hired me to figure out how to run the park. So I very quickly learned that just something as simple as needing to hang something on the wall, whereas before I could have called somebody and said, hey, you know, I need XYZ, I couldn't call anybody. And then not only couldn't I call anybody, they didn't have any tools. They were so used to not having anything operationally. They just, you know, okay, well, we won't do that today because we don't have the widget that we need. In fact, we don't even know what we need. My boss said several times when I first came on board, he said, we didn't know what we didn't know until we hired you so you could tell us what we didn't know.
That's great.
You're a guru.
I don't have really any resources. And a lot of the work we do, we partner with different departments in the city, and they've been wonderful to work with, been very welcoming, but it's a very different environment. That's one of the exciting things about this new job is I've been able to interact with people in situations that I would have never, ever had any contact with in my previous job. And so it's been a great learning experience. It's fun to get excited about learning things again, especially at the point I am in my career, having done something for a long time. It's not that you didn't get excited, but usually you weren't surprised much. And if you got excited, it was because something went like you thought it would. But now every day I'm meeting new people, learning new things, having a chance how to figure something out in a different way because I don't have the same resources.
Yeah, and that's great. And the other thing is you get to exert a whole new style of leadership because you have a whole set of new partners to learn from. And that's what growth is all about. You know, if there was one thing that you could tell people who are currently on the hunt, who are in transition one way or the other. You know, I tell my kids all the time, if I could redo age 20 to 25, I'd worry a lot less and enjoy it a lot more because with the benefit of hindsight, you know it's all going to work out. But when you're in the middle of it, it can be tough. If there's one thing that you could, a little piece of advice you could give to people who are in transition right now, what would that be?
You have to give yourself time. It's too easy to get caught up in the panic of, oh my God, I don't have a job. And I know that a lot of people are in the position where they live from paycheck to paycheck. And when they lose their job, their situation is much, much different than what mine was. But if you have the opportunity to really give yourself some time to adjust to the change, I don't think if you go from being employed in a long-time situation and you get laid off on a Friday, and on a Monday, if you sit down and try to rewrite your resume and update your LinkedIn page and do all these things, what you do then is not going to be as worthwhile as if you give yourself at least a week or two to adjust, because you're kind of, it's a knee-jerk, almost a panic reaction. Is this is what I have to do. If I've lost my job, I have to immediately make these changes to get a new job. I tell people all the time, don't worry about things you can't control, because it's wasted energy. So when you get into this panic mode, it's not going to help you. In fact, it's going to make it harder for you to adjust and hopefully make the right decision.
Well, Jeff, first of all, I want to thank you for taking time. Thank you for sharing your story with us. And I applaud your efforts. I applaud your successes. And personally, I'm glad that I see someone who had 36 years of experience and all those tools in your toolbox. And now you get to be a craftsman. Now you get to do something with that experience versus being exclusively reactionary and respondent to problems. Now you can take that expertise and create something. So I congratulate you on your endeavor and the team of people with you. And you started at the conceptual phase with Hemisphere, and I know it's going to be wonderful. And I'm glad that you will be associated with that aspect as well.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate the chance to talk to you and Doug.
Hey, best of luck to you. And thanks so much for calling in, Jeff. Great to hear your voice.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye, Jeff. Thanks for spending time with us today. We hope to hear from you next week.
Yeah, in the meantime, leave us a note on the blog and or send us a note at dave@jobtalkradio.org or doug@jobtalkradio.org.
Dave takes the good notes, Doug takes the bad notes.
I take the high road, Dave takes the low road.
It's a journey. It's a four-wheel drive journey. Hey, thanks again for being with us on jobtalkradio.org. We hope that you'll go to our website, leave a note, post a blog, send us an email. JobTalkRadio.org.
That's JobTalkRadio.org.